This is number 0068, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there. Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed again another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0068. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, you'll meet Dr. Dean DeLuke, who is the author of the thriller Shed Row. Where does a working physician get the time to write thrillers?
My clinical activities are now half-time, so the rest of my time can be devoted to writing and a variety of consulting activities that I do.
Marcus Melliton Jr. is the author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid.
Women that I just love would go out with a guy that had a bad reputation, making bad grades, had no real future ahead of them, and they just had women around them that were attracted to them, and you couldn't seem to break that. And I couldn't understand. As an engineer, I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to figure out how this works.
And Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. He has an opinion on just about everything, including the fact that it takes 2 years to train to be a cab driver in London.
They like to say that you've spent 2 years learning how to be a good cab driver. If it takes you 2 years to learn how to be a good cab driver, you must be an idiot.
And of course, we have lots and lots and lots of stuff and an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0068, is Bob Welch, anchor of the Noon Report, heard weekdays from noon to one on 1340 WSTJ, St. Johnsbury, Vermont. One of the many stations that plays the Stuff File. And thank you very much, Bob, for doing the slate on this week's show. Let's get right to the stuff, shall we? In this winter wonderland we like to call above the 49th parallel. You know, it's winter other places too, including in London. As Arctic blizzards sweep across southeast England, stranding hundreds in their cars and bringing motorways to a virtual halt in whiteout conditions, Kent police received a strange call on their emergency number, which in the UK is 999. I haven't been out to check on him for 5 hours, but when I went outside for a cigarette, he was gone, said the female caller. When the operator asked who had gone, she replied, "My snowman. I thought with it being icy and there not being anybody out, he'd be safe. It ain't a nice road, but you don't expect anybody to nick your snowman," she added. Police were definitely not amused. This call could have cost someone's life if there was a genuine emergency and they couldn't get through. It was completely irresponsible, said Chief Inspector Simon Black. Oh, sure, the cops call it irresponsible now. Wait till she gets a ransom photo with a guy in a balaclava holding a hairdryer to Frosty's head. They might think differently then. Meanwhile, back here in North America, there probably won't be any squeeze test involved, but Iowa prisons could soon be stocking prison-made toilet paper to save taxpayers money and provide jobs to inmates. The Des Moines Register reported that inmates in two Iowa prisons are testing a single-ply tissue processed at the Missouri prison. Roger Basden, director of the Iowa Prison Industries, says Iowa inmates could start processing their own toilet paper next year if the legislature supports the idea. Iowa prisons use about 900,000 rolls of toilet paper annually. Processing it in-house would save about $100,000 a year and would create jobs for about 50 inmates. Al Ryder, the associate warden at the prison in Anamosa, Iowa, says the paper is not fluffy, but the state says it's an acceptable roll. And hey, as far as I'm concerned, if you want two-ply, then don't do the crime. If your ass ends up in jail, it's gonna be rough. Wait a minute, that didn't come out right, did it? Anyway, moving right along, two teenage numbskulls in central Minnesota are accused of stealing at least 17 calves to start their own dairy farm. Stearns County Sheriff John Sanner says deputies received a tip that led them to 17 calves and eventually the teen boys. The calves are believed to have been stolen from three counties. Investigators say the teens told them they wanted to start their own dairy farm. They say the teens planned to keep the heifers and sell the bulls, splitting the profits. The calves have been returned to their owners. The case is being forwarded to prosecutors for possible theft and burglary charges. How utterly ridiculous. In November, patrons using restrooms at City Hall in Chandler, Arizona, were stunned to see wall signs warning users not to drink out of the urinals and toilets. Actually, an official explained, the environmentally friendly facilities flush with reused water from the building's cooling system, which must normally be colorized to discourage inadvertent drinking, and if it is not so harshly colored, must, by regulation, be accompanied by warning signs. Now, seriously. Under what conditions would you have to warn someone not to drink out of the toilet or urinal? Under what? I mean, okay, sometimes those urinal cakes look somewhat tasty, but even then, no. No. Really? No. Sheriff's deputies in Manatee County, Florida, arrested two men in October after a traffic stop when, following a thorough search of the car's trunk, they found marijuana. In fact, the search of the messy trunk was so thorough that they also turned up a bong, which driver Frank Fiasco said he had lost and had been looking for 7 years. Wow, if his trunk is that messy, then I'd hate to see his house. But then again, the guy's name is Fiasco. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest on the Stuff File program, responding to a domestic dispute call at the I-77 Motor Inn in Fairplane, West Virginia in October, sheriff's deputies encountered Melissa Williams naked from the waist down and holding a knife. Two men in the room, one her estranged husband, said Williams had threatened them. Here's what she said. Somebody is going to eat my, vulgar anatomical reference, or I'm going to cut your, expletive, throat. Yeah, she said that. Here's where it gets even more weird. The sheriff's report also noted that one of the men approached Williams to comply, but was repelled by Williams's horrible vaginal odor. Yikes. In November, Williams was sentenced to 90 days in jail. Let's hope during those 90 days, she discovers some feminine hygiene products. Okay, let's change gears completely and get to our first guest on this edition of the Stuff File program. Dr. Dean DeLuke is the latest physician in a long line who is also a thriller writer. His book is called Shed Row, and it travels from the operating rooms of New York City to the horsey set of Lexington, Kentucky. Dean is on the line with us right now. Hi, Dean.
Hello, Peter. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being on the program with us. So what is it? I'll start off by asking, what is it with all these doctors who are also great mystery writers?
Well, I think it's a couple of things. One, I think that the discipline required to write a book is similar to the discipline that's required to practice medicine or surgery. I also think that the experience base of doctors is such that there's a lot to draw on. You know, there's great drama in the operating room or in the emergency room, and just look to television ever since the days of Ben Casey, I just dated myself, to Grey's Anatomy. There's always one or two medical dramas. So I think it's a combination of the discipline and just a lot of life experience to draw on.
Well, that's okay. I watched Ben Casey and Dr. Kildare myself as well, so there you go. With the lifestyle and the workload that doctors have, let's talk about yourself. Where do you even find the time to do this, or is it almost the therapeutic downtime that you need with being a busy physician?
Well, I've spoken with doctors who would fall into both of those categories. In my case, my clinical activities are now half-time, so the rest of my time can be devoted to writing and a variety of consulting activities that I do. But I've also spoken with doctors who practice full-time. And as they say, as you say, they come home and they find it extremely therapeutic to sit down and write. So they'll do it early in the morning or weekends or evenings. I didn't have any particular time. I just found the time whenever I could, but I had the luxury of not being a full-time practitioner when I wrote this book.
Okay, we mentioned in the introduction that it goes from the operating rooms to Lexington, Kentucky and the horse set, and obviously you have a medical background. Do you have a background in the horse world as well?
I do. I grew up in high school and college working on a thoroughbred farm. My father had a small farm in upstate New York that turned into a large farm, and I literally put the fences up and baled the hay did whatever had to be done on the farm, and that's where I really got my interest in thoroughbred horses. Presently, I'm a partner with Dogwood Stable, which is a partnership based in a farm based in Aiken, South Carolina, and I've owned several thoroughbreds in partnership with Dogwood.
So tell us about the story of Shed Row.
Well, basically, the story centers around a multi-million dollar stallion who dies under some very mysterious conditions on a supposedly secure farm in Lexington, Kentucky. And this is something that actually did occur during the 1990s, by the way. On the other hand, most readers have said you don't really need to know a lot about thoroughbred racing or have a love of the sport, because at its core, it's a fast-paced thriller, a page-turner, and there's a surprise ending that I don't think most readers will see coming.
Now, when it comes to writing, now that you have this book out, what are your contemporaries, your medical doctors, your friends, people in the medical profession, what are they saying about your book?
Most have been very complimentary. I think it's something that a lot of people think about doing but never find either the time or get around to doing it. So most have been very complimentary.
Was there any doubt on your part in writing this book?
Oh, sure, absolutely. I had written and published a lot of scientific and business-related articles, but obviously a work of fiction is an entirely different work. So sure, there were doubts along the way, but you just have to persevere and stay with it.
Again, with other types of writing that you have done, more of a serious medical nature, professional nature, were you concerned let's be honest, that type of writing that you normally do is considered to be drier than fiction, as it were?
Yes, it's a different skill set entirely, and I had some great mentors, people like physicians like Michael Palmer and Tess Gerritsen, who taught me a great deal. Another attorney writer, Robert Degoni. So I tried to learn from some of the best.
Is writing something that you're going to continue to do now that you're a published author, an author of a published thriller at that?
I have a start on a sequel to Shed Row, so I do hope to come out with another. This one was just recognized by Suspense Magazine just this week as one of the three best medical thrillers. They selected about 35 books in all, so that was certainly a thrill and an honor. So yes, I hope to have a sequel to Shed Row.
You mentioned again the number of medical thrillers that are out there. Obviously, there are a lot of doctors, like I said, practitioners who are writing medical thrillers, but clearly there is an audience for it as well. What do you think it is that attracts an audience to a medical thriller, especially when you consider, you know, there is a large portion of the population who, for one reason or another, are afraid to go to the doctor, yet they're certainly willing to read about these type of things?
That's a very interesting question. I'm not sure I have a good answer to it, but I think part of it is just the idea of facing your fears. You mentioned there is a fear of things medical and of disease and illness, so that's part of it. And I also think, as I said before, just the drama associated with operating rooms and emergency rooms and giving readers an insider's view of that has a certain appeal.
Quite often when people are writing their novels, they have in their mind's eye an idea of what it would visually look like if their book were turned into either a television movie or a theatrical film. Have you given thought to that?
Well, a couple authors told me they described the novel as hugely cinematic and said that I should get the work to the right people. I would love it if that happened. I think there are some great cinematic moments in terms of the horse races and car chases and just the action and some of the medical scenes as well, the different venues, St. Lucia, Manhattan, Lexington, Kentucky. I would love to see it.
The book is called Shed Row. It is written by Dr. Dean DeLuca. And we should mention, as I said, this is not your day job. Where do you work as a physician?
In upstate New York, Schenectady, New York, which is the birthplace of General Electric. And I have a half-time practice there with partners who allow me to do all the other things that I do.
Well, glad to hear it. Again, the book is called Shed Row. It's written by Dr. Dean DeLuca. And Dean, I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on our program.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Dr. Dean DeLuca, author of Shed Row. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0068. And you'll find links to Dean's website and also links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
From Montreal, Canada, and spanning the globe like a butterfly on speed, this is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll meet the author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. Plus, we'll hear from Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, who shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. And, of course, we do have an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news. Residents of a town in Washington State are seeing their homes taken away by the ocean. Waves driven by strong winds have been hitting homes, and one house has already been destroyed. The water is just a few feet away from several others. The town's name, by the way, Washaway Beach. Now, when you buy a place at Washaway Beach, you hope it's there forever, said one resident. Others said they'd probably just start over someplace else. Well, in my opinion, if you buy a house at a place called Washaway Beach, prepare to be washed away. Hope these folks don't plan on moving to Death Valley. Meanwhile, in Pittsburgh, a woman who locked herself out of her home decided the best way to get back into it was to set the house on fire and then let the fire department let her in. Investigators said the woman intentionally set her rear awning on fire and then called 911. Firefighters arrived at the home and the woman asked them to let her into the house. Instead, she was arrested and charged with arson. Seriously, lady, you didn't see this one coming? Really? You were that close to becoming this week's idiot of the day? That close. But we'll get to that later. Okay, if you're like me, you've probably spent a lot of time pondering the question, exactly who does own the sun? Well, after billions of years, we have finally learned that the sun's owner is a woman from Spain, 49-year-old Angeles Duran. Now, Miss Duran has said she became the legal owner of the sun back in September after reading about an American man who had registered himself as the owner of the moon and most of the planets in our solar system. It seems there's some international agreement which states that no country can claim ownership of a planet or star, but it says nothing about individuals. Anyway, she says, "I backed my claim legally. I'm not stupid. I know the law. I did it, but anyone else could have done it. It simply occurred to me first." The document issued by a notary public declares Duran to be the owner of the sun, a star of spectral type G2, located in the center of the solar system, located at an average distance from Earth of 149,600,000,000 kilometers. Duran now wants to slap a fee on anyone who uses the sun and give half the proceeds to the Spanish government and 20% to the nation's pension fund. She would dedicate another 10% to research, another 10% to end world hunger, and would keep the remaining 10% herself. She said, "It is time to start doing things the right way. If there is an idea for how to generate income and improve the economy and people's well-being, why not do it?" Well, perhaps, for starters, because you're freaking loopy. Just for starters. I'm sure I can think of some others. Give me time. Meanwhile, who would have thought that a calendar featuring squashed squirrels, battered badgers, and dead ducks would become a huge hit? And while some stores are refusing to carry it, Kevin Beresford's Roadkill calendar has been selling like crazy. 58-year-old Kevin traveled all around his native England to take his photos of animal carcasses, some of which were so squashed they can't be identified. He says, "Some people are finding it too controversial to stock, so I'm selling it online and it's going really well." The calendar opens with four mallards lying dead on an industrial site and ends up with a dead hedgehog. It's dedicated to all the courageous critters who never quite made it across the road in time. Wow. I'm sure PETA has something to say about this. I'm also sure that Kevin, nor myself for that matter, really don't care. And 44-year-old Rick Ellert of Thousand Oaks, California, certainly knows how to make life on a cruise ship a little more interesting. He's been arrested and charged with releasing the anchor of Holland America's MS Rheindam cruise ship while it was sailing. Ellard allegedly admits he entered a restricted area and released the ship's rear anchor, which he said used a system that is similar to his own 50-foot yacht. No surprise, he was also allegedly drunk at the time. Yes, alcohol was involved, yet again. He now faces charges in Tampa federal court of attempting to damage a vessel and endangering a ship's safety navigation. Fortunately, the ship was not damaged. Also, fortunately for Rick, they don't make people walk the plank anymore. And while we're at sea, or on ships, looking for that ultimate Christmas gift for the person who has everything, well, may we suggest an aircraft carrier? Under intense pressure to raise money to cut a record peacetime budget deficit, Britain has put an old aircraft carrier up for sale on a government website and is considering all bids for the HMS Invincible, which saw action in the 1982 Falklands War. The ship, completed in 1980, was part of a British task force sent to recover the Falklands after the islands were occupied by Argentinian forces. And there's a celebrity connection, as Prince Andrew served as a helicopter pilot on the ship during that conflict. Bidders have until January 5th to make an offer, at which time the Ministry of Defense will consider which gives the best value for money. Dealer prep not included, your mileage may vary. Okay, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. It seems to be that bad boys get all the recognition these days, and in a lot of cases, the ladies. Marcus Melliton Jr. is the author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. He based his senior thesis on a power theory that nice guys don't get lucky with women. Marcus is on the line with us right now from Houston, Texas. Hi, Marcus.
Hello.
We keep seeing news of bad boys everywhere, and I noticed that you've got actually a Bad Boys Hall of Fame, and certainly one of the people on it is Charlie Sheen, and we'll get to that in a moment. But what made you do this thesis in the first place?
Well, I was a guy in engineering school, good grades, not bad looking, you know, a decent person, good family and everything, couldn't get dates to save my life. And there's a lot of guys out there that are in that situation, out of college, high school, or whatever. But it just got to the point where I know that they were dating. Women that I just loved would go out with a guy that had a bad reputation, making bad grades, had no real future ahead of them. And they just had women around them that were attracted to them. And you couldn't seem to break that. And I couldn't understand. As an engineer, I thought, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to figure out how this works. And so I followed around guys that I figured didn't have the things you would normally think would attract women. They weren't famous, didn't have a lot of money, didn't have a job, didn't really have a future, had drug, alcohol problem. Those kind of, what I call them now, mating credentials. That if those guys that I followed could attract women, then what was the base elements that caused those women to be drawn to them? And so the objective in the book was to teach guys how to become the disaster women search for.
Okay, so why do women search for the disaster? Do they feel that, like people who like to buy houses and fix them up, that these guys are fixer-uppers?
Yeah. You know, they look at it as their, basically their project. He's my project. You know, I've got a bad boy, and I'm going to teach him Beauty and the Beast. The whole story is around that. You've got a guy that was abusive to, you know, some witch who then puts a spell on him. And that woman rejects everybody in town. And this is the guy she wants, is the guy that's a beast, okay, because she's going to fix him. You know, and that makes her a superwoman. So that's one part of it. There's another. But one thing I was looking at was what could people learn from this? And that's really where the book was kind of going to, is how do guys figure out how this all works? And one of the things I found was confidence without merit.
You know, go ahead.
Well, what that is, that's basically, how many people do you meet that are really confident, but they shouldn't be? You know, they have nothing going for them. Nothing. But they're belligerent. They're aggressive. They're, you know, a-holes, you know? I mean, they're just, and yet women were attracted to that. Because what they look at is they look at someone who's arrogant. They look at that and they go, oh, he's confident. Well, maybe he's just arrogant. Maybe he's an idiot, you know? And so people look at confidence, and everyone's attracted to people who have confidence. But it's the confidence without merit that these guys that I followed had. They just knew women were attracted to him. And if a woman wasn't attracted to him, then he thought there was something wrong with the woman.
Well, I think I worked for that guy.
I think we all have.
Oh, that's scary. Now, the thing that I find, I understand completely what you're saying, and I kind of get it in terms of women who fall for these guys. The thing that I will never understand, there are guys who find women and get married, and they're in jail. I don't understand that.
That's the thing that's just nuts. You know, I was just reading an article. I'd forgotten about this article, and it was talking about, this is 2009, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, killed multiple women, and he still gets love letters from women. The same thing, you know, the same thing happens with a number of these murderers. You know, he's in San Quentin. There's something else, that in prison, they actually do group marriages. Okay, these guys are in prison. Now, here's the thing, is that you look, and we got Charlie Sheen. Does he have a reputation of cheating? He likes, you know, he likes prostitutes. He likes weird things, you know. His first wife knew that, okay? She releases him. The next wife knows that. And then he gets caught with this, you know, having this raving thing after a cocaine binge with another prostitute, you know. So she knew that before, so now she's getting rid of him. And my thought was, well, does that mean poor Charlie Sheen's never going to get a date again? You know he is. Someone else is going to come. And yet there are guys out there listening to us right now who are good, decent people, and they can't get a date. But Charlie Sheen can. Mm-hmm. And it's known he's a disaster. You know he's going to be a failure. So that is something that just drove me nuts to watch. And so, I took the guys that didn't have the fame and the fortune and all that and looked at them. And it's a confidence thing. But the main thing men have to learn from this, and I do this in my book a lot, and I think when you get through it, you start to realize that if you're ever rejected by a woman, you can never take that personally. because she may turn around and send a letter to Richard Ramirez asking for a date, you know? And so you can't go by their evaluation of you as to whether you're worthy or not. And you can maintain your confidence knowing that if you're rejected, it means nothing. It means absolutely nothing. You could ask 50 women out in the same day. They could all turn you down. It means nothing. You can go right to number 51 and ask her.
Okay, but the exuberance, the confidence that you say these guys exude, isn't that similar to what you just said? Because you just said a woman can turn you down, and then she can run off and send a letter to Richard Ramirez, which when I hear you say that, it says, well, gosh, she can turn me down, but then maybe there's something wrong with her. She'll go and pick up a guy in jail next. It's like the confidence of the guy who says, you know, goes after a woman and she rejects him, and his immediate response is, oh, well, she must be a lesbian.
Yeah, yeah. or that causes him to become more interested. Well, she's rejecting, then I've got to fight for her. You can kind of go the other way too.
Right.
But yeah, you know, he'll talk it down. But a lot of the bad boys do that. You listen to them. If they get rejected, they think she's crazy. I mean, they do. They think, why wouldn't you want me? Yeah, you look at the guy and you go, why would she want you? You have nothing. You have nothing going for you. You're a disaster. You got a bad reputation. But they can go through life, and it's that confidence that they look like they've got that can attract women. So that's really something that I work really heavily in the book, and it's a lot of fun to read because that's, you know, that's I like to write satire and humor. And then, you know, we've got this Gabe Watson, and this is just recent. You know, he gets married. He's married for 11 days. His wife drowns mysteriously in a scuba diving accident in Australia. And this has been in the news for a while now. They suspected something was weird because he was a proven scuba diver before this, and how did she end up dead? So he comes back to the United States, and they're investigating him. He ends up going to prison, and you know, where he gets convicted in Australia. They want to convict him over here, but he's already married again. He found another wife. And one thing that they found he was doing, he was going to his dead wife's grave and tearing up her flowers and throwing them away. It was happening so often, they put a video, a camera up there to see who was doing it. It was him.
Hmm.
And that's how they realized that, hey, maybe this guy is, you know, did kill her. But here's the thing. He does get married again. Someone else was interested in him. And yet, there's still guys out there that can't get a date. And these guys, what happens to them is they get turned down. They take it personally. And women can sense fear. It's like a horse. You know, you get on a horse and you're scared to death of it. It knows it. And it's going to toss you. But with women, if they just know you've got some fear, they will turn you down in a flash because they're looking for confidence. They want that.
Now, when you wrote this book, you've had this book up for a while now. What's the reaction been from men, and what's the reaction been from women?
I've had a number of reactions from men. I've had men who read it who were bad boys and go, what's the news here? Because they had it naturally. They got it naturally. They just knew it, and it was like, so why even write it down? Everybody knows this. I've had other guys who completely changed their attitudes, and I've even had some swing like too far, and that's really become the arrogant SOB and would report back to me saying, I get all the dates I want to now, and I'm less of a person than I used to be. And so I kind of get that. But with women, it was the most surprising thing. They would read it, and the thing that they have a lot with their bad boy boyfriends is a mystery. They look at the guy and he's a mystery to them, you know, and he's also a project to work on. And they think deep down inside, she's going to discover the gold. Well, deep down inside, there's nothing. And when she reads the book and I lay out how these guys operate, she goes, wait a second, this is exactly what he's doing. And she realizes, well, there is no mystery. He's just your average run-of-the-mill street jerk. And I didn't catch on to it. I thought he was special. And it kind of blows the mystery, and there's nothing left to it. So I've had a number of women drop their boyfriends after reading the book.
The book is called Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. It's written by Marcus Melitin, and you can check out the website, which is sharkbaitpress.com. I thank you very, very much, Marcus, for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Enjoyed it.
Marcus Melaton Jr., author of Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0068, and you'll find links to Marcus's site, which is sharkbaitpress.com, and either to amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRico Jones. If you think the lawsuit against McDonald's over spilled coffee was outrageous, wait until you hear about the lawsuit involving a spilled milkshake. A man goes through a drive-thru at McDonald's and buys a milkshake and fries. He puts the shake between his legs, the fries next to him, and drives away. As he reaches for the fries, he squeezes the drink with his legs, and it spills on him. Distracted, he rear-ends another car and causes minor damage. Incredibly, the owner of the damaged car sued McDonald's for failing to warn the customer about drinking a milkshake while driving. This case went all the way to the New Jersey Supreme Court before it was finally thrown out for good. But when the restaurant asked to be reimbursed for the thousands it spent on legal fees in this frivolous case, the judge said no. He actually said the plaintiff should not be penalized for being, quote, creative and imaginative. What? Let's be fair. If judges don't penalize people who bring frivolous lawsuits, this problem will never end. It's time for some personal responsibility. It's time for common sense. Find out more at foundationforfairciviljustice.org.
What are they saying about If the Rains Don't Cleanse? New York Times bestselling author David Mixner says, as a writer and advocate for Africa, I could not put down Ben Patrick Johnson's If the Rains Don't Cleanse. Aubrey Hooks, the U.S. ambassador to Ivory Coast, says, fascinating and hard to put down. If the Rains Don't Cleanse is CNN breaking news disguised as historical fiction. If people can't put it down, then why haven't you picked it up? If the Rains Don't Cleanse, the tale of missionaries in 1950s Belgian Congo is loosely based on my own parents' lives. It's available online, including Amazon.com and Amazon.ca. I, Ben Patrick Johnson, want you to read this book. My mother, Avidale Johnson, wants you to read this book. Now remember, this is a woman who survived as a missionary in Congo half a century ago. She is tough. Now do not make me send her your way. If the Rains Don't Cleanse, get it now, or deal with my mother. From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Now, the Stuff File presents the Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And joining us once again on the program is indeed Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello, live from the streets of New York.
And belated, first of all, belated Thanksgiving to you and your family.
Gobble, gobble, gobble. This is not the time of year, either then or in the coming weeks, to be a turkey in the United States, that's for sure.
Clearly, clearly. Now, one of the stories I want to talk about has to do with a robbery that took place at a pizzeria in your fair city.
Yeah, one of the oldest gags that's been used in lots of movies is somebody walks into some place or comes up to somebody on the street and says, your money or your life, or give me your dough. Well, that's what happened. They walked into a pizza place. They pointed a gun at the owner of the store and said, give me your dough. Well, strangely enough, the owner of the store had the presence of mind, with a gun pointing at his head, to hand the people a bag. And it turned out, as the robbers ran away and soon discovered, it was actually a bag of dough. Now, you got to admit, you got to be pretty cool to have a wry smile on your face as you pull off a caper like that when somebody has had a gun pointing right in your nose. In any event, the cops were able to track these guys because the bag of dough was leaking flour. And like the kids who got lost in the woods, the cops were able to follow the flour and get the perpetrators.
Excellent, excellent. Now, I touched on the idea of Thanksgiving a little while ago in introducing you, but one of the things I want to talk about and go back to Thanksgiving is that I understand that some of the city fathers in your fair town want to enact a law that deals with large stores that are open on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, I don't know that it's such a bad idea. I, myself, am always against government intrusion into, you know, everything you're doing. But in this particular case, they've come up with the following idea. Let's close down the big stores anyway. You can't do the little ones because they're really family operations. But close down the big stores from, let's say, 1 to 5 on Thanksgiving Day so that employees can't really be made to come into work. You know the old saying, come into work today or don't bother coming in tomorrow. So a lot of people are intimidated and they give up having a Thanksgiving. It's such a universal holiday that the city feels, let's close for a while and let the people stay with their families. As a matter of fact, one of the very big electronics stores in the city actually over the Thanksgiving weekend, which was 4 days, ran ads saying that they weren't going to be open on that Thanksgiving, which was a Thursday, and they thought that maybe some of their other stores, other people's stores, should be closed also. It was a nice gesture.
Very nice indeed. Now, fans who listen to you on the old radio show I did, and now fans who listen on the Stuff File program, always enjoy listening to what you have to say, and they say, oh, he sounds so New York. He's got a New York accent. What is the deal with the New York accent? People say that it's not as pronounced, not just yours, but the idea of a New York accent is not as pronounced as it used to be.
Forget about it. What, you got a problem with the way I talk? As a matter of fact, this afternoon I'm driving over to Jersey. Maybe I'm going to Tutty Tut and Third. No, I mean, that is kind of like the New York accent. And there are some people who live in the city, excuse me. I guess they want to, you know, the rain in Spain falls mainly in the plain. Ooh, by George, she has it. That are actually taking lessons to get rid of their New York accent, at which time they will get lessons to get rid of their Jewish heritage. Then they will take lessons to get rid of their black heritage. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. You are what you are, and we have accents all over the United States, and it's kind of silly to try to get rid of it unless you want to be a talk show host, and in that case, as I understand it, you can't have any accent.
Well, we try hard not to. In any case, the another throwback is something that I think a lot of us were familiar with when we grew up, and that is the old-fashioned, authentic-looking barbershop. And I understand they're making a comeback in New York?
Yeah, they are. When I was a kid, there was lots of little barbershops all over the place, and you'd go in there, and of course the grown-ups were in there talking, but the time the kids were supposed to go was generally on Saturday mornings, you know, because then the adults really wouldn't be in there talking all their dirty stuff and all of that. Well, that whole kind of industry just died out and everything became very fancy, schmancy, stylish places, with the exception of one particular neighborhood in New York City, and that's Black Harlem. Black Harlem has retained all of its barbershops. I mean, it's pretty much almost like something from the movies. Well, I guess it's a good idea because now it's starting to come in again in many of the yuppie neighborhoods where you go in just for a haircut. You don't have all of the styling and all of the dyeing and all of that kind of stuff. And you even have a barbershop pole standing outside. So it's kind of nice. And you can now, you're beginning to be able to find them, you know, in the Wall Street area, the groovy East Side area. It's a throwback, but I think it's a nice throwback. And plus the fact your haircut isn't going to cost you $65. It will cost you maybe $20.
Now, I saw a story in the, I believe it was the New York Times, just around Thanksgiving, that actually dealt with your industry in your city. And I want to get your thoughts on this. I understand New York taxi regulators say that they are trying to simplify the complicated and rarely enforced cabbie dress code to simply require, quote, a professional appearance. First of all, may I ask what you're wearing right now?
Right now I'm wearing a pair of jeans that have some patches on them because we never throw away my jeans, but nice jeans, clean jeans, washed jeans, a nice long sleeve T-shirt, and I am neat and clean. Remember, I'm being a cab driver. I'm not being, a member of the cabinet at the moment. So there's nothing wrong with that, and that's something that I would say 99% of the cab drivers in New York City are neat and clean, regardless of what that moron David Letterman says. So it was just something with the taxi and limousine commissioner, who's probably the number one jerk in the world, who knows nothing about cabs. He felt like making the announcement, knowing that the fools on Reuters and the Associated Press would pick it up and make a big deal out of it. It's just rubbish. I'm here to tell you that, by and large, most of the New York City cab drivers dress very nicely. They're very polite. They have clean cabs. because if they don't do all those things, they're not going to make any money, and they're not stupid.
Now, let me go on to the touch on what the old dress code was, which I find rather interesting that this stuff had to actually be put in print. It said, the Taxi and Limousine Commission said it was doing away with the old dress code, which placed specific bans on swimming trunks, tank tops, sandals, and tube shirts in favor of a law simply stating cab drivers must, quote, present a professional appearance. And I'm trying to figure out what made them feel way back whenever the dress code was put in, that they had to put in swimming trunks. Was there somebody out there driving a cab in Speedos?
I don't know. I mean, that's what I'm curious about. I mean, I know an awful lot of cab drivers, old ones, retired ones. I've been in the business for 30 years. I can't honestly say I ever saw a New York City cab driver wearing swim trunks or anything. They will, from time to time, on a very hot day, some of them will wear, let's say, Bermuda shorts, but not shorts that I've ever seen or anything. No, it's listen, the Taxi and Limousine Commission in New York City has constantly and consistently been run by people who have never driven cabs, know nothing about cabs, and they are nothing more than political appointees. And it's just thoroughly corrupt. So from time to time, they have to make an announcement indicating that they're somehow controlling an industry. As a matter of fact, I will tell you this. New York City gets a better taxi cab industry and a better quality of taxi drivers than the Taxi and Limousine Commission actually deserves. If you listen to them, it really would be one big crap house.
Now, just to make sure that to let people know this is not a huge story, the fact is that the fines, I understand, are $25, and there were only 3 tickets issued per year. And how many cabs are there in New York?
Well, right at this moment on the streets, there would be about 50,000, but our total staff would be 150,000.
So there you go. And finally, congratulations. You guys rank second, New York taxi drivers, as the world's best behind London.
Well, London, that's a con game, and that must have come out of some London public relations firm or something rather. Let me tell you something about the Brits. They have spent an entire century, 2 or 3, exploiting people, making them apprentices and putting them into some kind of medieval fiefdom. To become a cab driver in London, you have to spend 2 years of involuntary servitude. And to justify that, at the end of 2 years of involuntary servitude, when you finally do get your real license, they like to say that you've spent 2 years learning how to be a good cab driver. If it takes you 2 years to learn how to be a good cab driver, you must be an idiot. That's just their justification of doing what they do for 2 years. So when the cab driver becomes the real cab driver, they can say, oh, we did it to make him the best possible cab driver. No, no, no. They did it to exploit and cheat those poor fellows.
Okay. I'll let you know that on this list, New York's yellow cabs came second on the list, of scoring 27%, which was up 10 percentage points from last year, even though Manhattan's cab drivers tied with Parisian cab drivers, hate to say it, as the rudest.
Yeah, well, we're not the rudest, and if the person who wrote that survey would like to meet me in a boxing ring any day of the week, I'm ready. It's just pure rubbish and crap.
Well, we've talked to you on the program for many a years, and I've always found you to be fascinating, entertaining, and polite. And if people want to...
What about sophisticated and urbane?
That too, sophisticated and urbane. And if people want to get tours of the city of New York or find out more about what you have to do or find out some of the things you've said, people can go to your website at www.gabby.com, and they could also find you online by sending an email to peter@gabby.com, correct?
That's right, and thank you very much for saying that.
And thank you once again, sir, for being on the show.
Bye-bye.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City, live from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps.
The Stuff File.
And we're in the home stretch of this edition of the Stuff File program. You've got an idiot of the day coming up in just a matter of moments. By the way, have I mentioned on this show the Stuff File store yet? No, I haven't. There is the Stuff File store where you can find all kinds of Stuff File gear. If you're a fan of the Stuff File program, you can purchase either t-shirts or caps or mugs or water bottles. There's tote bags. There's even a teddy bear. You can get a mouse pad if you want. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and order your favorite item. Hint, hint, they would make great stocking stuffers just in time for the holidays. I'm just saying. The Stuff File store at thestufffile.com. Let's get back to the Stuff File news, and here's your pro tip of the day. It's just rude to answer the phone during sex. That's all I'm saying. Of course, it's even ruder to kill your girlfriend for answering the phone during sex. It happened in Milwaukee, where 46-year-old Garen Lewis faces a single count of first-degree intentional homicide in the death of 44-year-old Sharon D. Dorsey. Now, according to the criminal complaint, medical examiners determined she had been strangled and was dead for some time by the time she was discovered. A neighbor told police that later in the day, Lewis had come to his house crying and confessed to killing Dorsey with a belt for talking to someone else while the two were in bed. Wonder how the person on the other end of the line feels. That must have been some important call. Either that or Garen really isn't, you know, well, that good at it. Gee, I hope it wasn't a telemarketer calling. Anyway. Okay, off to the Middle East for our next story. Since there's no hiding the fact that Iran's president, Ahmed Ahmadinejad, and his cronies are clearly anti-Semitic, this story offers some delicious irony. His gang of merry malcontents are said to be outraged. Outraged, I say, after finding a prominent Jewish symbol that had been on display right under their noses since 1979. It seems there is a large Star of David sitting right on the roof of Iran Air headquarters at Tehran's airport. The building was originally built by Israeli engineers prior to the Islamic Revolution. It's been sitting there for the last 31 years until somebody finally noticed it on Google Maps. Sadly, it won't be there much longer, according to the Jerusalem Post. Iranian government officials have already ordered its destruction. But the thought that it's been there for so long does kind of bring a smile to you, doesn't it? Ah, yes. And while we leave Ahmadinejad behind us, let's comfortably and rightly segue into this week's Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the Strange Things Adults Do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
A German pensioner who wanted to seal off the entrance to his cellar ended up bricking himself into it. The senior citizen from Jena told police he only became aware of the mistake once his handiwork was completed, which police described as pretty stupid in a statement. After camping out in the cellar for several days, he resolved to free himself by knocking down a wall, but chose to demolish his neighbor's wall rather than the one he had just put up. The man had been at loggerheads with his neighbor for some time, and they informed the police when they heard drilling noises. The police were waiting for the pensioner when he made his great escape and have now launched an inquiry. Why would someone who's trying to seal off the entrance to his cellar brick himself inside while doing the job, only to break down his neighbor's wall to escape? One reason, and one reason only. He's an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0068. Hope you've enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H. And while you're at the website, you can find information and links to all of our guests by going to the What's On page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and again, that's 0068. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/PAHolder and on Twitter at twitter.com/PAHolder. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJMedia.com, aboard Taiwan's national carrier China Airlines, and over the air at World FM in New Zealand, Gold FM in Singapore, and WSTJ St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Thanks for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.